From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is your Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk modal verbs. Must we? Should we? Shall we? We shall. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras. You are there at your home in Armilla, Spain. How are you today, Kathy?
A little sticky, but I'm fine, thank you.
Ew, Ross. You are there at your home in Toronto. And how are you today, Ross?
Fletcher, I'm fine, and I'm nice and cool at 72 degrees. It's a perfect day for me. Sunny and 72.
Everyone's favorite weekly Toronto weather update. Thanks.
Yes.
Which we all love. Well, before we get going today, I want to mention, as we do from time to time, that you are always welcome to send in questions to us. We have some wonderful, dedicated listeners who often send in questions to us, but we also know that we have a number of new listeners out there, and we would love to hear from you. You can email us. We'll talk about our email addresses at the end of the show. You can also send us your voice, whether you want to record a voice memo or if you want to use the KMUW app to do that. Again, I'll talk about that at the end of the show as well, and you may get your voice heard on air. But we're always looking for more questions. We certainly do not have an idea of everything in the world to talk about, and some of you bring up some really wonderful topics to us, so we are always looking for that. That is something that you may do, or something that you should or ought to do, perhaps. Speaking of those words, may, should, ought, do those have a name?
A very nice segue, Fletcher.
Thank you.
Yes, they're called technically auxiliary verbs, which are called modal verbs. And we're going to go into that in depth in several seconds or minutes.
In painful depth, I might
yes. add. Yeah, Kath and I were talking. I got really into semi-modal verbs. And Kathy
oh, no.
had a fit,
so.
I cut them off. I cut them off at the pass on that one. There
she
is
said,
a
we're
limit.
Not talking about semi-modals. We're only going to talk about modal verbs. So I got very upset.
We should only talk about.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that you guys tipped me off to what these are, because if you had said to me, we're going to talk about modal verbs, or we're going to talk about auxiliary verbs, I would have said, what?
Well, I know.
You'd have said, gee, I've got another appointment. Sorry.
No, but they can be fun, and it's really good right now in the election season, because there's a very interesting use by politicians, which we're going to go into. But first, I'm going to let Kathy segue into Kathy.
Well, now I can't segue because you set me up so bad. I was gonna
say, Kathy, you're so
Fletcher.
Demure.
we talked about people writing in, and we just got this one from Jim in Tucson, an email. And he said, have you ever noticed how a word will fall out of usage for years or decades, then suddenly everyone starts using it again? I've been noticing people using the word demure lately.
Boy.
I don't ever recall it being, don't get me started on how often it's been
yeah.
used.
Hmm.
That was me, not him. That was not Jim, that was Kathy. I don't ever recall it being used much in my lifetime, and rarely, if ever, in the past few decades. Suddenly, people on Instagram and TikTok, for example, are using, maybe overusing, yes, Jim, you're right, the word lately. And he said, I really like the word because it says and implies so much, but I'm not sure I've ever used the word myself. What are your thoughts on this? And we had to say, yep, this is the key. Ross, that headline is perfect.
Oh, goodbye, Brat Summer. This is a headline from, was it Allure magazine? Goodbye, Brat Summer. Hello, Demure Fall. Which is very interesting. Because it points out to the extremely ephemeral nature of these words.
I have not seen this all over the place. This is new to me.
Demure?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not a new word to me, but I have, you guys are acting like this is just absurdly everywhere, and I have not seen this.
It started a week ago. Literally,
oh.
I think it was a week ago.
It's like,
and let me tell you, I get a ton of emails I get like fashion emails and, you know, like that kind of stuff. Every other line is demure. People.com, Jennifer Lopez hops on the demure trend with video demonstrating how she drinks. The most demure outfits for your fall. And it's mindful and demure. That's the other thing. It's not only just demure, it's mindfully demure.
And I'm going to jump in here because when it apparently a TikTok personality started using the word, after she used it, she got 36 million views on her site, and it just exploded in views.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing that Kathy and I are both talking about when we said goodbye, Brat Summer, hello, Demure Fall, is in a way these are important in the sense that they're suddenly being used, but in another way, like, they're here today, gone tomorrow. I mean, we're not going to have Demure being... my guess is Demure is going to disappear in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like, next fall is not also going to be Demure Fall.
No. I mean, Kathy is right. The brand names are just, like, glomming onto this thing. But I think that it's going to quickly disappear. And you know, Walmart's going to be talking about, I don't know, I'm going to say a word right now.
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga winter. Yeah. Somehow that doesn't have that same ring that I would have liked to.
I don't know.
I think we could shove it down some people's throats if we tried hard enough.
Yeah. Kathy, you're just so rutabaga. Oh, thank you.
So thank you, Jim, first of all, for writing us. Because I must say, though, the funny thing was, as I was saying it to Rosa, right before we got the email, I was going through my emails and I saw all these things with Demure. And I didn't think. I was just like, okay, I don't know what they're talking about. And then I saw the thing and I was like, wait a second. It is all over the place right now. But we go back to what we said before. Brat's going the way Chugi's gone. So, yeah, Demure is going to be bye-bye.
Can I just do one last little Latin factoid or not?
Must you? But
I didn't know that demure, they think, possibly came from the Latin mature, maturus. Did you all know that?
No.
I did.
Care?
No. I did, no. Because I looked it up, too.
Okay. But it also came, they think, possibly from the Anglo-French past participle demeurer, which means to stay. And interestingly enough, we're saying exactly the opposite is going to happen with demure. It's not going to stay.
Okay,
so now on to our topic, Fletcher, which we're backing into, as is typical of politicians. We're talking about an aspect of political speak, but it's really a basic form of linguistics. So we're going to start, we're talking modal verbs, but we're going to, like, draw this out a little bit. Okay, Fletcher? Fletcher, you are now running for the Senate.
Oh, you're God.
You're quitting your radio career and you're going for the Senate.
All right, here we go.
You're coming on strong. You're attacking your opponent. And then here's how you attack your opponent. She's kind of rising in the polls, and you're kind of concerned. So you want to zap her. Why don't you read this sentence that you're going to say?
Yes. My opponent took money from her campaign and spent it on a luxury trip to Hawaii.
But is it true? You're saying right now, you know this is true, right?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Now, she says that this is the key thing here. You don't really know it's true, okay?
Ah.
You better prove this. Do you have proof that she took money?
Well.
Do you have proof, Fletcher?
Well.
Huh?
Then, in that case, you know, my opponent might have taken money from her campaign and spent it on a luxury trip to Hawaii.
Ooh, Fletcher.
I misspoke before. I misspoke before.
That's good. Weaken it even further.
Or also, you know, my opponent may be taking from her campaign and spending it on a luxury trip to Hawaii. It's within the world of possibility.
Yep. Or?
You know, my opponent could have taken money from her campaign and spent it on a luxury trip to Hawaii. Who can say?
See, now, why are these better than the first ones?
Because they give me wiggle room. Do we call these...
You got it!
Do we call these weasel words? Is that what
yes.
we call these?
Welcome to the wonderful world of modal verbs.
Yes.
They are. They're very weaselly. And that's the beauty of it is. Because you're not accusing. You're suggesting now.
Yes.
Did you ever see Fletcher? Did you ever see House of Cards with Francis Urquhart? He was like the chief whip of the Conservative Party that he became prime minister.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
And he had a classic modal verb line because he was a slime. And he said, you might very well think that. I couldn't possibly comment. Now, that means absolutely
right.
nothing.
If I can interject, because Ross used to make fun of me all the time when we were having a debate or an argument or I with somebody else, And I was going, you might have a point, was what I used to always say to you. Remember that? And you used to go crazy because it's like, what are you saying? It was like, I don't know, but I got out of trouble. You know, everybody's happy now. As a former PR writer, let me tell you, boy, did I use these. It was always like, better safe than sorry.
And as a former Foreign Service officer, same thing. You'd always, when you're doing diplomacy, you're always... Remember those letters I used to write, Kat, that said absolutely nothing?
Oh, my God,
nothing?
They were wonderful. Yeah. They were wonderfully long and meant absolutely nothing. Yes. You could never pin you down.
I know.
You're my kind of guy, Ross.
And let's just quick, one more thing quickly before we go on. We did the political thing trying to avoid responsibility. Another way of using modal verbs is to imply something and add... A lot of times brand managers and ad execs will use that. They're implying something and getting it in your head that, gee, that could happen, but even without saying it does. Like we had one, Kathy and Ross's magic Wonder Bright toothpaste may make your teeth 100,000% brighter, okay?
Right.
May. They don't really do it. You don't know. Or I said 1,000%. I'm sorry. 100,000 is a little bit too much. But
why not? Come on. It's our toothpaste. I want brighter. So the bottom line is, though, so the ones, we all use these. Mm-hmm. And I mean, some of us more than others. And the most common ones are must, shall, which is not used that often, actually, will, should, would, can, could, may, and might.
Right. They introduce a little bit of ambiguity into the situation.
Yeah, they're verbs that we use when we give advice, we make requests, or we ask permission.
And they are vague. That's the beauty of them. You're right. Yes. The vagueness is what makes them so great for politicians or ad execs.
Although sometimes they're not, though. When they're giving advice, Fletcher has to wear a suit on the campaign trail. That's not vague. I mean, that's not a vague usage. They do have different usages in that sense.
You're right, okay. Actually, in the terms of giving advice.
Okay.
And for permission...
Fletcher, can I stop listening to your campaign speech?
Well, you can. I mean, isn't that the bane of every elementary school student?
Ugh.
Is can may and may can. I?
Our parents used to do that all the time to us.
I mean, come on.
To the extent where I like to say can.
Yeah.
Can I go? No, you may go.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
That sort of, yeah.
It's like, I know what's right and what's wrong, but just give me a break. Let me say can, mm-hmm. Right?
It's a pet peeve of mine. I'm with you because I still remember that. It still sticks in my craw. Yeah. Also, we know that you're not saying, like, am I able to?
Right.
Okay.
Right, you know, right. Exactly. Like,
we're not that dumb. You know?
And it goes back to what we've talked about all along with clarity and, you know, not being overly prescriptive either. I mean, it's clear what you're saying. Mom, can I go to the beach today? You know, is clearly... You're not asking about the, you know, the ability of you to go to the beach. You're asking if you can, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, it's obvious what you're trying to say. And I think Mom, in our case, was wrong to give us that sort of lecture all the time. But and they also actually can talk about, we just said that just now when I said, can you go? They also talk about probability and speculation. Like, could Fletcher actually become our next senator? Unfortunately, Fletcher, I have to say probably not.
But he could.
Well, I think the filing deadline has passed. I suppose if I were appointed or something, then
we'll have to work on that. But yeah, it's the thing that gets me is you're not aware. I don't think you're aware of how often these are used. Mm. I mean, you use them pretty much all the time. Like we were talking about habits. You will do this. I would do that. I should do this. I can do this. There's such an important part of everything. Whether you want to use them for the vagueness, as we were talking about before, or for the specificity and advice or whatever.
Yeah, they do have multiple roles. Can I get two quickie grammary things in here, Kathy, before you yell at me?
You may, Ross. You can and you may.
There are two interesting things. Kathy made one statement automatically right there. They're not declarative. Most sentences are declarative. They make a factual statement. These are hypothetical. Fletcher swims every Tuesday. That's true or not true, whatever. Fletcher can swim every Tuesday. The second is the modal. Mm-hmm. But here's the weird thing. They're weird verbs. They don't inflect. They don't change like normal verbs. They don't even change for plurals. Just think about this right now. Fletcher could be taking a lot of money from Kathy and Ross. Now, normally you would put you take the taking and you take out, it's to take normally, you take off the to. You don't use the to. Fletcher could be taking, not Fletcher could be to take. You take off the two of the infinitive. And the other thing is Fletcher could be taking 15,000 people and Fletcher could be taking. It doesn't change for tense.
Hmm.
It doesn't change for a number. It's always the same way.
You don't conjugate it. I mean, it conjugates exactly the same every time.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're also called, they're also semimodal. Should I go into that or should
this
I not?
This is the one where, okay, do it very quickly, Ross, otherwise I'll be forced to hurt you.
Okay, some verbs act like semimodal sometimes and modals the other time. I just said take off the two. Fletcher, I dare you to go to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That's a regular use of dare. Fletcher, how dare you go to Washington?
Oh, wow.
That's a modal verb of dare. There's no to in front.
Oh, wow.
Do you see that?
I do.
Thank you. See, Fletcher seems pleased with the semimodals, Kathy.
That's because he's being polite, Ross. I just also now want to say that what I really like is when you look at modals, it's like there's degrees of strength. Some of them are weaker, and you can go from weaker to stronger. There's a continuum, if you will, of possibility when you use them. You may go, you might go, you should go, you must go. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Okay, so let's start at the beginning of that. May is less strong than might.
May and might are weird to me because I think nowadays more people, I'm speaking for myself actually, I tend to say might. I don't think I really say may.
Neither do I.
People use them a lot interchangeably, or just sort of pick one or the other. And often either I'm asked or I'm asking myself, should I use may or might here? And I never really have an answer for that.
Well, technically, most people do use them interchangeably. I pretty much always use might. May is usually for permission or possibility, or you're certain about something.
Yeah,
let's take that.
Let's take out the permission part. I think that one's more clear. Like, you may do this.
Yeah.
It's okay for you to do this, right? But if I say, or you know, somebody says, do you want to go for drinks after work? And I say, yeah, I may do that. Or I say, yeah, I might do that.
Well, might, this is what, I see, I do might as well. Might more often is used technically again, because I don't think this is really the case now, is theoretically should be used more often for something that is either in the past or is hypothetical.
Yeah.
Whereas may is more often something that's likely to happen.
Oh.
I've heard may is more for present.
Oh.
Kathy's
yeah.
right. And I've heard might more for past perfect. I might have gone to the store. I may go to the store.
Or it's for something that you think probably won't happen. It might. I might win lotto.
I will say with those two sentences that I said, I may do that or I might do that. I do feel like I might do that is me expressing less likelihood that I would do that.
But the other interesting thing, Fletcher, is even as we're discussing this, their usages are changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there was a survey done, and I'm going to jump ahead to one thing. But there was a survey done, and this was unfortunately written British English and spoken British English. And like might, for example, in written British English lost 17.9%. It gained 5.1% in spoken English. May was amazing. May is used 17.6% less in written British English and 39.8% less in spoken British English between 1960s and the 1990s. So the words are basically, the usages are changing quite rapidly.
Yeah.
And I think in that sense, we can get kind of confused or, you know, have communication problems with them.
Well, it's interesting because the other one that I think is sort of dying out is must when you're speaking. You don't usually say, I must do that. Do you? I don't.
You say, I have to.
Exactly. You don't say, I must do that, or I've got to do that. You don't say, I must.
You don't. And interestingly enough, Kathy, can I throw in the percentage declines?
Well, if you have it at your fingertips, it apparently
you do. I
have it
together right here. In written British English, must has declined by 29.1%. Notice the specificity here. I mean, you know, we're talking almost a third has declined. It's declined by 54.2% in this survey in spoken English. That's astonishingly big.
The only time I can hear me in my head saying must is when it's something like really serious.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
I don't know then even that I really use I must do that.
Maybe for emphasis or something?
Yeah.
I think I would still say have to. Fletcher, yeah. You have to listen.
I know. I think I would too. I mean, I can imagine a person saying, oh, you must do that. You know, like that's really something you ought to do. Oh, it's so much fun. But I wouldn't. I would still probably say, oh, you have to do that.
Yeah, so would I. I don't think I would ever say must. Yeah. Must, I feel like I'm wearing like a floral dress in a 30s movie
yes.
or something. You know, that's not me.
Oh, you simply must go.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Rather, yes. Oh, I'm going to throw one more grammary thing in here just quickly. Because modal verbs are auxiliary, they can't be used on their own, except when the meaning is implied. For example, I'm going to just think, Fletcher, can you swim?
I can.
You can, but implied is swim, obviously.
Right, exactly.
Saying yes, I can has no meaning outside of that, you know, that context, which is sort of interesting with modal verbs as well.
Right, because if you just walked up to me and said, Fletcher, can you?
Yeah.
I'd be like, what?
Yeah, oh. No.
Maybe. Should I?
That's interesting. I've never thought about that with those words before, but that's true. You have to have something that attaches onto it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one, though, that gets me and I is shall.
Mm-hmm.
I use shall still. I sound like that lady in the floral dress in a movie. Actually, I shall do this. I do. Does anyone else? Do you guys, either of you, use shall?
Not at all. It's a little unfortunate, at least in this specific context, that none of us is a lawyer, because I think shall, I mean, I think this is a really important verb in legal writing,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, shall versus will or something like that. Like it all, they actually mean different things.
It does. Shall in legalese says that an action is mandatory.
Yeah.
Yes.
May is like there's permissive. It's like there's like discretion involved. Shall is you shall do this blank.
And shall is usually replaced with will in our normal speech. But like, for example, there's a quote here I just saw in the defense industry. Product specifications must use the word shall to identify contractual obligations.
Wait, so shouldn't that have said products shall use the word shall?
I was just going to say
very good,
that.
Fletcher. Very good. You're right. Very good. If you say will, you're in trouble.
Right.
The one thing, Kathy and I were talking about shall before. Kathy says she uses shall. I don't. I use will.
I do. I say I shall. I don't usually say I shall fill in the blank, though. I usually say someone says we can do that. I say I shall.
My son uses it. Alex uses it. He says
I know.
Shall,
Alex and I are very similar. Actually,
I know.
With stuff.
I don't like the shall. I mean, I don't. It just sounds really kind of stilted to me.
It does sound like stuffy, but I think it has more emphasis to me. I mean, technically, you use shall for the first person, and you use will for you, he, and she.
Oh, I hate that. And it's reversed. One is for like the obligation and the other is for the future, and it's reversed. I shall in one case, he shall in another case. Anyway, I'm going to tell you, Fletcher, a joke here we found. And it was a hilarious joke in 1880.
So, sorry.
Okay, a Victorian schoolmaster was trying to impress the distinction upon his charges of shall and will.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the story of a boy who drowned. For he had cried out, I will drown, and no one shall save me.
Ha ha! That's a decent
Fletcher, sample. You're not laughing. Okay.
I'm laughing inside, I guess.
Yes. Okay, do you get the idea of, okay, the boy drowned because he cried out, I will drown, and no one shall save me. Okay, do you understand the...
Not exactly. I will drown implies there's some wiggle room and no one shall save me. Says definitely no one is going to come to save me.
Fletcher, you're really there.
Am I? I mean, okay, like I said that, but I still don't really get it.
Okay. I mean, this is one of those useless distinctions that I don't think we really need to know, except if we're telling Victorian schoolmaster jokes, which I don't think most of us want to do. But the idea is I shall drown. In the first person, expresses the expectation of drowning. Mm-hmm. Okay?
I'm already, like, guffawing here. Go on.
No one shall save me is the simple expression of a future occurrence. Okay? Now, when he didn't say, I shall drown, he said, I will drown.
Right.
I will drown expresses volition, suicidal intent.
Oh.
The first person is desire. The third person shall should be command. He's saying, basically, don't save me.
Right. No one shall save me.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I tell you, that's we could go on the circuit with this. Boy, we're going to be big in Vegas.
Yeah. This is it, guys. This is our future. I don't think we really need nowadays to really worry too much about shall and will differences. I think Kathy and Alex can say shall if they will. And Fletcher and I can say will if we shall. And, you know, who cares?
When I was looking up this stuff, I was fascinated because I happened upon a test for English as a second language. And they were teaching modal verbs. And I really pity the poor people who were taking this course.
Oh, this was good, Kathy.
It got so, it's so vague, and you realize the problem is we go back to context and stuff. They had an example, and
Kathy,
I took the
test.
Try
to stop. Don't explain it. Try it on Fletcher. Let's do it.
Okay. It's a fill in the blank.
Okay.
Veronica blank play tennis very well. Your choices are, which is correct? Veronica should, can, or must play tennis very well.
Well, I think it depends on the situation, doesn't it?
Well done, Fletcher.
Exactly.
That's what we both thought.
Because they said can was the right answer. I plugged all three in, and I got dinged on should and must,
but
it could
Veronica,
be any.
If Veronica's in the finals of Wimbledon against, I don't know, Serena, and, you know, if she wants to have any chance of winning, she must play tennis very well.
Yeah.
Right. And if she's taken a lot of lessons, you go, she should play tennis very well at this point. For God's sake,
yeah.
We spent a fortune.
No, I don't understand that.
Okay, I want to, before we end, take a really wide view of all of this. And I don't mean this question in a bad way, since we've just spent half an hour talking about modal verbs. But my question is, like, who cares? But I mean, does it matter beyond being something interesting for people who like language to talk about?
Oh, I think it does. I think in one case where we can be aware, as we were doing earlier with the politicians, we can be aware when we're being subliminally moved to believe certain things, and we go, wait a minute, they're not really saying that.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. You know, this they're saying, you may see an incredible change in your life. Yeah,
maybe it will, maybe it won't. And I think that's pretty vital. I think we need to be aware of that.
I think you are 100% right.
You think he might be 100% right?
No, I think he is.
Also, I'm going to throw this one out. Look, what if you're on the street and someone says, what's a semi-modal verb? You're ready to go.
You know, Ross, it's uncanny. That happened to me the other day, and I said, you got to talk to my brother.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
New from The Embedded Podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.